Good afternoon, everybody. Let's call our first case, which is case number 74130, Mountain Falls Acquisition Corporation versus the State of Nevada State Engineer. Mr. Edwards on behalf of the appellant, Ms. Sondheim on behalf of the respondent. Mr. Edwards, do you want to reserve any time in rebuttal?
I'd like to reserve 3 minutes, please.
Two or three?
Three.
Three. Thank you.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Good afternoon, Chief Justice Gibbons, may it please the court. Tom Edwards on behalf of the appellant, Mountain Falls. Today, I'd like to start the analysis with due process, because I really think the analysis can start and stop right there. But there are other deficiencies with the state engineer's ruling, specifically the application of the anti-speculation doctrine to this case, so I'll address that next. And then, if time permits, I'll address how the state engineer's decision is arbitrary and based upon, or not based upon, substantial evidence in the record. So due process. Just last year, this court confirmed that water rights are property rights protected by due process. That's not in dispute. So because of that, before the state engineer can take away our water rights, we must receive, quote, timely and adequate notice detailing the reasons for a proposed termination and an effective opportunity to defend by confronting any adverse witnesses and by presenting his own arguments and evidence orally. That is just black letter due process from the U.S. Supreme Court 1970 case of Goldberg v. Kelly. So I'd like to start first with the hearing element of due process. Did we have an effective opportunity to defend by confronting any adverse witnesses and by presenting our own arguments and evidence orally? Simple answer is no. The state engineer held no hearing in this case.
But how do you distinguish between the term of Eureka case, in which this court previously has found that statute to be constitutional?
Without a hearing, I don't think you can find this statute, the 534.090, as constitutional if you're going to deprive a party of their perfected property interest, which is what our water rights were. They were perfected property rights. You can't take that away without a hearing. Not only did the state engineer not hold a hearing, the state engineer did not even send us a letter asking for additional information. Past practices, to the extent we submit something to the state engineer and he wants additional information, we get a letter from him saying, hey, please provide us X, Y, and Z. Here, nothing.
So what would you put in that letter?
I think in that letter he should have stated...
No. What would you have put in that letter had they asked for the additional information that was different than what was in the prior letters?
Well, if he asked for information, we would have provided whatever information he was requesting. I mean, we...
Did anything changed? You weren't able to put the water to beneficial use, and you'd explained why in the other letters, correct?
That's correct.
What was different that would have been included in this letter had one been sent?
Well, had we known, for example, that the state engineer was going to say we were speculating, and therefore our water rights are going to be thrown out because we're a speculator, we would have provided evidence to the state engineer saying, we're not speculating, we're a bank. We're foreclosed on these water rights to mitigate our damages. Speculating is in the opposite end of the spectrum of what we're doing. For example, the state engineer concluded that our discussions with third parties to put this water to beneficial use were half-hearted. Had we known that, we could have gathered all of the declarations of the folks we've been talking to illustrate this is anything but half-hearted. The state engineer concluded, made a factual finding, that the economy in Perón was not preventing us from using these water rights. Had we known he was going to make that conclusion, we would have gone to provided an economic study showing that the economy in Perón had not turned around, that agriculture had not turned around, that there were no large production housing developments or commercial developments in Perón at that period of time.
Why didn't you change its use? I mean, here this was for agriculture. You certainly knew, the state engineer recognized that you were aware of changes that could have been made, and you never even did that.
Well, that doesn't stop us from exploring all the different options. You're right. It was originally intended for irrigation. And we were talking with the owner of the land. Can we use this for irrigation? But we didn't stop our efforts there. We were talking with the utility company to see if we could bank these rights. We were talking to the Great Basin College to seeing if they could use these water rights because they were opening up a campus. So the reason we did not change the use is because we didn't have a use at that point, right? Had we been able to reach an agreement with somebody to use those water rights for housing development, it's at that point in time that we would change the use.
You didn't have any agreements with anybody, right?
That's correct. That's correct. We were working on it with multiple different parties over the years.
I know that there's been a number of cases where people have tried to raise with the state engineer a downturn in the economy as a reason for not having completed or obtained a beneficial use. But is there a basis for that in the statute?
Absolutely. 534.090 expressly requires the state engineer to consider economic conditions in his analysis of our forfeiture extension application. He must consider that.
Prior to this forfeiture, had you ever submitted any economic conditions in your prior extension requests?
We explain in all of our extensions that the economy in Parama was hindering our ability to use the water. But to that point,
other than that general statement, anything in particular?
No evidence. But again, at that point in time, we didn't know the state engineer wanted evidence. Mm-hmm. His form asked for an explanation. The statute does not ask for proof and evidence. You saw that pulled over and over again in the state engineer's brief. That's not in the statute, not in the statute that we were dealing with in 2015.
Weren't you invited to present details of the efforts that had been made and attach exhibits to support it?
Just a detailed explanation, Your Honor. They did not ask to attach exhibits. They said you can attach additional sheets of explanation if you want.
No, the form itself, doesn't it invite you to attach exhibits?
No, Your Honor, it does not. And let me find it for you, just to be sure. Says, the reasons given for requesting an extension of time shall be fully explained with as much detail as possible. And then parens, use an additional sheet if necessary. All it asks for is an explanation. It doesn't ask for proof and evidence. We would have been happy.
I'm looking at number one. It says attach exhibit if necessary. And that's for an extension. And that's the state engineer's.
Sure. An exhibit, to the extent your explanation can't fit in these few lines. Yeah, and that's exactly what we did. We attached an explanation as an exhibit, but that's different. An explanation is different than proof and evidence. We attached that explanation as an exhibit. That doesn't mean proof and evidence.
How do you distinguish, in all of these, you have the anticipated time required for beneficial use is unknown. And then you have the preferred equities case that says you can't hold water rights hostage. Distinguish preferred equities from the fact that you wrote unknown on all of your applications for extension.
Well, I mean, we said we didn't know how fast the Parama economy was going to improve. We didn't know how quickly the next housing development was going to come along, or next commercial development, or agricultural turnaround. Right? Any of those one factors could have changed. It could have been 3 months from now. It could be 2 years from now. We simply don't know. Right? It's anything from us holding these hostage. We'd love to get rid of these water rights. We don't want to hold these water rights. We need an opportunity to do so until the economy improves. We simply don't have the ability to do so.
At some point, wasn't there a $500,000 offer for the water rights?
There was.
So there was an offer for someone to use them, but just not at the price that you wanted.
Well, we had an appraisal, a 2015 appraisal that appraised these water rights at a little over $1.7 million.
Doesn't the appraisal take into account economic conditions?
I'm assuming it does, absolutely. And therefore, when somebody offers $500,000 for water rights worth $1.78 million, obviously the rule of law cannot be we have to accept pennies on the dollar or we risk losing our water rights.
Who bears the tension between you mitigating your losses and the state engineer maximizing water use? Who should bear that responsibility?
Well, I mean, it's a joint responsibility. We apply every year for an extension, and we provide whatever information the state engineer requests, and then he decides whether there's good cause or not. Under the confines of due process, in the confines of following the statutory considerations that he must consider, without speculation and was with supported by substantial evidence. And in this case, there is no substantial evidence.
Who bears the burden of showing beneficial use?
We do.
And do you think you've shown that?
Well, we haven't had beneficial use. What we've shown is attempts to put it towards beneficial use and explanations for why we have not been able to date, or at least through 2015.
Did this third application that got denied show additional efforts or progress during that additional year that would justify an additional extension?
Absolutely. Well, one of the differences, we continued conversations with all the parties through 2015. The addition in 2015 was we started conversations with Great Basin College, who was very interested in our water rights. Unfortunately, they were having a delay in their land grant process, and therefore they weren't ready to take the water rights from us at that point in time.
But it had been 14 years, correct, since those waters had been put to beneficial use?
Well, let's break down that. It's been close. So the last time that water had been beneficially used was 2004. Then we got sued in 2005 for a quiet title action. That took us all the way to 2008, right in the middle of the Great Recession, at which point there was no production or no development in Pahrump. And then we started the application process to extend the forfeiture in 2013. These courts, these water rights have been litigated almost for longer than we've held them. We have fought hard to maintain these water rights, and we think we've used substantial efforts, or demonstrated substantial efforts, to put that water to beneficial use.
So what's the due process violation by not... You're saying due process requires them to hold a hearing?
Absolutely.
You can't just rely on your papers?
No. I mean, it's due
process. Is that true for courts, too? They can't just rule based on the papers? They have to have a hearing? Or
if
it's a due process violation?
If you're going to take a vested property right from somebody, yes, you have to have a hearing and an opportunity to present evidence. You must.
Submitting paperwork and exhibits supporting your argument isn't sufficient.
No, because we have to have the opportunity to present live evidence. And
what's that based on?
Well,
what's the authority?
That is Goldberg v. Kelly, 1970 case, U.S. Supreme Court case. It says we must have the opportunity to present, not only confront witnesses, but present our testimony and evidence orally. We didn't have an opportunity to do that. They just decided they could send us a letter, and after the fact say, no, you should have known I was going to call you a speculator. That's simply not feasible.
But isn't saying unknown speculation, isn't the answer when they say, when are you going to put it to beneficial use, and you say, I don't know, isn't that the definition of speculation?
Well, in one definition, yeah, I think you're probably right. The question is, should the anti-speculation doctrine apply here? It's never been applied before to a forfeiture extension permit.
Well, you don't have to get there if you just decide there's no good cause for your extension, right?
That's true. There'd be two independent bases.
Counsel, you're down to about 2 minutes. I'll give you an extra minute. We do the three you've reserved, and we'll give Ms. Sunheim an additional minute as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Tori Sunheim on behalf of the state engineer. This court should affirm the district court's order. I wanted to answer two of the questions that my friend has not answered. First, in the form itself, it does say attach an exhibit. That's in the record at page 329, and it's question number 6. And question number 6 says, explain in detail the reasons for the non-use and describe progress made during the past year to resume beneficial use. Parens, attach exhibit if necessary. Beneficial use is the basis, the measure, and the limit of a water right. This right is tied to the need for beneficial use. We have three main points. First, this is a textbook example of water speculation. Water that's being held not for its use, but for its profit, for its price. Second, this bank is asking this court to second-guess two layers of discretion. First, the discretion that the state engineer exercised under the statute, and second, the discretion that the district court exercised to reweigh the evidence considered and then to allow new evidence on appeal. All of this only pulls focus from the fact that even in the face of forfeiture, Mountain Falls still has no plan, no project, no contract, and has not shouldered its burden to place its water to beneficial use. Even if you take the number since 2008, since the Adavan case, that is still 7 years. Mountain Falls told the state engineer, told the district court, and is telling this court today that it will only explore options for beneficial use. Only explore options once the prompt economy improves sufficiently. And Mountain Falls gets to decide what sufficient means. Nevada is the driest state in the nation. Speculation surges the price of water, a precious, vital resource, and it keeps it from people who desperately need and can actually use it. Forfeiture and the anti-speculation doctrine are created to prevent that. First, the bank's goal to wait for a better price falls squarely within the anti-speculation paradigm. There is no goal of beneficial use here, no evidence in the record, briefing, or anywhere of a plan for beneficial use. This court in Batcher said, making a profit at some point in the future is not a beneficial use, and that when the necessity for the water ceases to exist, the right to the water ceases as well. And Mountain Falls has argued that the anti-speculation doctrine only applies to new appropriations, but beneficial use is an ongoing requirement. And so you can't just acquire the water right in the beginning and then drop off of the face of the planet and never have any use for it later on.
Ms. Sundheim, there's been a relatively recent Colorado case that extended the speculation doctrine, anti-speculation doctrine, to extension requests. What would be the analysis you would provide for this court to extend the principles in Bakker and Adavan to forfeiture / extension requests?
Sure. I think the answer is in the state engineer's ruling and in the statute itself. So in NRS 534.090, you have a list of different factors, and it says the state engineer shall consider, among other reasons, these factors. So I think the anti-speculation doctrine attaches when the statute says among other reasons, when there is speculative basis to analyze it. And so the state engineer's ruling said at record at page 17, the state engineer believes an examination of anti-speculation doctrine is not required in every extension of time, but where the reasons given in the extension suggest that non-use has occurred on speculative grounds, so as here, where Mountain Falls is saying we're waiting on the economy to improve sufficiently, where there's no beneficial use and has been no maintenance of the water right, then an examination of the doctrine is appropriate, and the language of the forfeiture statute in this case is broad enough to allow for such consideration. And I think, too, the reason that this court adopted the anti-speculation doctrine, or at least the reason that was expressed in the Bakker case, came from Vidler, from Colorado, which said that the purpose is to prevent those with vast monetary resources to monopolize for personal profit rather than beneficial use. So let's say it occurs when there's a showing of a desire for personal profit and no desire or no expression of beneficial use.
So the in Bakker, the rule quoted at page 777 of the opinion says, we thus adopted the anti-speculation doctrine as a limitation on an entity's ability to demonstrate beneficial use when it did not have definite plans to put the water to beneficial use or a contractual relationship with an entity that had such plans. That seems to be the rule. So your argument is that this language is prospective as well as current when looking at the permit. So in other words, you would look at this after the permit's been determined, throughout the life of the permit until beneficial use has been achieved.
That's correct. It would happen upon the new appropriation, but also when you're when a beneficial use inquiry has arisen at a later point in time as well. It's an ongoing requirement.
So had Mountain Falls entered into an agreement with the Pahrump Valley Water Company, and I may have mispronounced that name, would that have satisfied the second element of the and avoided the application of the anti-speculation doctrine?
Potentially, although I have a point about procedural due process that gets to that application. And I think the biggest challenge in this case is once you get to that third extension of time, Mountain Falls has said they're waiting for the economy to improve sufficiently, and then that seems to have been that main challenge in this application.
Justice Silver made a comment about the town of Eureka having potentially resolved or at least had an influence on the procedural due process constitutionality issue. What's your view on that case?
The town of Eureka case did uphold as constitutional the forfeiture statute, and not only upheld it as constitutional for current and prospective applications, but also retroactively past 1967. And so procedural due process is flexible, and in addition, I think I draw the court's attention to the Curtis Park case, the second case, where the lower court, this court found that the lower court had abused its discretion by actually by directing the state engineer to hold a hearing where the NRS doesn't require it. And this case is very similar to the Curtis case and the Town of Eureka case together, because while the Town of Eureka case deals with NRS 534090 sub 1, this case is a good cause showing. So first, in the NRS, in the forfeiture statute, it says 5 years of non-use works a forfeiture. When the state engineer has evidence after 4 years of non-use, which we have here, it's not disputed, you send a four-year letter. That four-year letter was sent. And that four-year letter puts the bank on notice that that its water right is subject to forfeiture. That if, even if you haven't done anything for the past 4 years, you have one more year to show beneficial use or to apply for an extension of time. But under the extension of time portion of the statute, sub 2, it says that the applicant may, upon request, that the applicant upon request has to show good cause and that the state engineer may grant it. This is discretionary, so it puts it squarely in that Curtis Park case. After the first year, Mountain Falls said that they don't know when they're going to put the water to beneficial use, but that they had been in discussions with Pahrump Utilities Company, with Utilities Inc., and with Nye County. So the state engineer granted that, gave them the benefit of the doubt. Second year came around, that's after 6 years of non-use. Generally, they had the same reasons for non-use, but it seemed that they were still attempting to put the water to beneficial use, attempting to enter into an agreement. But by the third year, we're seeing the same reasons. And in addition to those same reasons, Mountain Falls says they're waiting for the economy to improve sufficiently. So what this tells the state engineer is that they're only filing for extensions while the bank shops for the best deal. That cannot be good cause. It's not effort.
I have a question as to, I was just curious as to why it took more than 10 months to actually issue the denial on that third extension, whereas it appeared that the state engineer issued the denial within a month on the other two. Just curious as to what caused that 10-month delay. What was that?
I don't know, Your Honor.
Okay.
It could just be administrative just an administrative delay.
But, what standard of review would you put on the state engineer's determination that this amounted to a violation of the anti-speculation doctrine.
The standard of review is an abuse of discretion. And again, that's that Curtis Park case. And it says that the lower court, and this is also why equitable relief, why it's not error for that district court to say that it was without authority to give, to grant equitable relief. In Curtis Park, court said we agree. And the reason is that equitable relief wasn't available to override the discretion for a good cause inquiry where the language has may, and that the standard of review in that kind of statutory language is abuse of discretion.
And so applying that here, it would be that do the facts of record establish an appropriate basis for the engineer to have said no, no more extensions. You're simply holding this, waiting for a better price, and that's not good enough. You would say the whole of that is a abuse of discretion standard, and if some evidence supports it, that's the end of the hunt?
Yes, Your Honor. And I would...
What about the, I guess if I can call it a more general fairness concern, although they argue it under the umbrella of due process, that after they say X, Y, and Z are our reasons and an extension's granted, and they say X, Y, and Z again and an extension's granted, and then they say X, Y, and Z again and now it's denied. Is there some misleading by the state engineer, or do they have some obligation to say you have to do something more eventually?
No, Your Honor, and in a sense, this is an equitable estoppel argument that just yeah. because you say, just because we've allowed for it year one and year two means that something different has to happen on year three. But the truth is, if you just parrot the same excuses over and over and say you're having discussions and having discussions and having discussions, and on the third year, in addition to having discussions, you're saying you're not even going to put forth more effort until the economy improves, well, that's where the trigger comes down and you say, well, this is just not... It's not effort. This is a sophisticated bank. They have vast monetary resources, and yet after 7 years, there's not even an agreement. No beneficial use to work towards, no project, no plan, no contract, no evidence whatsoever that there's any light at the end of the tunnel.
So I wanted to return it as a follow-up to both Justice Pickering and Justice Kadish. Kadish's question. The rule itself says they either show proof of beneficial use or progress toward it, or they've entered into a contract that demonstrates that. So on the first two extensions, they represented to you that they were working with the Pahrump Valley Water Company or somebody else, but there were no contracts. Now the third extension comes forward, and in addition to saying we're working with them, but basically we're going to wait till the economy improves. Is that the case? Is that the record before us?
It's my understanding that that's the record before us. If you look at, all you need to do is look at
reviewing, you were asked a question about standard of review. In reviewing the state engineer's decision here, if you apply the rule, there are no contracts entered into with third parties.
Right.
And there's no representation that in fact, counsel today, I believe, has acknowledged that there are no written agreements or any agreements with any third party.
Or even any plan towards a particular beneficial use. It's still permitted for irrigation, and they're still discussing...
So if a party had submitted an affidavit that said, we've entered into an oral agreement with some third party, would that have changed the outcome here?
Potentially, yes.
Uh-huh.
It could. Okay. And, you know, I wanted to note that forfeiture is in the statute for a reason. And this is an opportunity for this court to establish case law to further the town of Eureka that reinforces the purpose. This is the driest state in the nation. The public needs every single drop. It can't be held as a monetary commodity. It prevents access to those who do need it, to all of us, and to the public. It's a statutory management tool that's critical to ensuring that you can only get what you use.
With regard to that policy statement that you've made, my understanding was that during the hearing on the petition for judicial review, Mountain Falls actually said, you know, the economy is bad, and it may be upwards of 50 years before the economy is improved. So do they just hold those rights hostage for 50 years until the economy improves?
The answer would be no, they shouldn't be able to hold that until the economy improves. And that's speculation. The law forbids the reason. And equitable relief is not available to achieve the opposite of the state's beneficial use policy. We've demonstrated zero need, and they're entitled to zero water. And I would ask, I request that this court affirm the district court's order.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Edwards, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Justice Silver, I'd like to circle back to your question for me, your first question for me, as I don't think I did a very good job responding to it, asking me to discuss the Eureka County case and whether that addresses the due process issue. And frankly, I think it does. This court just last year concluded, quote, due process requires junior water right holders in Diamond Valley to be given notice and an opportunity to be heard before the district court conducts the hearing. So I do think that that case does support my position. We're entitled to notice and an opportunity to be heard. We did not have an opportunity to be heard because we were never afforded an opportunity for a hearing to present evidence.
Is that the Eureka County versus the Eureka Township case?
It's Eureka County versus 7th Judicial District.
Okay, that's a different case.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I was talking about the Township of Eureka case, not the county case that you're discussing.
Okay.
That's okay.
You've heard the state engineer said that our efforts were valid in 2013, valid in 2014, and all of a sudden in 2015, they just don't believe us anymore. That's okay. He doesn't have to believe us, but he has to hold the hearing to take evidence upon which he can actually make that conclusion.
So then if the first application had been denied for lack of good cause, it'd be fine.
Well, no.
Because you wouldn't have relied upon these two other validations.
It would still have to be supported by substantial evidence. It cannot be arbitrary. It would still have to be complied with due process requirements for notice and an opportunity to be heard. There's a statement that we've said in our application that we were just going to wait for the economy to improve. That is absolutely false.
No, I think that was... I thought that was indicated in all the applications, that the economy was bad.
Yes.
And that was your reason. But then during the hearing on the petition for judicial review, that's where that statement came out.
I was the one that argued that, Your Honor, and I can assure you I did not say that we were stopping all efforts until the economy improves.
No. Yeah, but you were using that as a basis for your request for the extensions, but then I thought there was a statement during that petition for judicial review that said it could be up to 50 years before the economy improves.
I certainly don't remember that. And
well, the appendix, Volume 4, 579 through 581, it's represented that Mountain Falls acknowledged that it may be upwards of 50 years before the economy improved enough that it would be economically feasible to sell the water rights for their fair market value.
We don't have any idea how long it's going to take for this.
Is that a correct representation of this record?
I'd have to, is that from the order itself?
Transcript.
The transcript?
Yeah.
Did I say I'm sorry.
Okay, we'll check that. But I guess it gets back to an important question Justice Stiglitz asked. If indeed the reason you can't get the water beneficial use is because the economy is a state that will not recover for as much as 50 years, it seems like the state engineer should be given latitude to weigh the interests of the permittee against the state policy and conclude that we're not going to wait that long.
I understand.
Or anywhere near it.
The state engineer is using essentially the anti-speculation doctrine to create a catch-22 situation. We are obligated in our application to address the economy, to say we hope the economic conditions will improve. We are required by statute to do that. And then to say, the state engineer said, you address the economy, gotcha. You're a speculator, I'm getting rid of your rights. That can't be the case. The anti-speculation doctrine as applied by the state engineer is simply inconsistent with the statute, which again requires us to address the economy.
Well, as I read the rule from Bakker, the anti-speculation doctrine, if extended to extension requests, allows for you to show that there's a proof of beneficial use created or an agreement with a third party who will accomplish the same objective. There is no such agreement in this case.
That's correct. Okay. We were working diligently towards that agreement.
I understand.
We never agreed to stop.
But I'm just saying, based on that being the rule, in what way did the state engineer misapply the rule?
Well, again, for the first time, he concluded that we were speculating, right? And the analysis of whether somebody's speculating was
already... What I recited is the rule from Bakker. It's a quote. So in what respect did the state engineer misapply the rule that I was quoting from?
Up to this point, the analysis of somebody's intent was only at the time they acquire the rights where there's a new appropriation. It's never been extended years down the road when somebody is seeking an extension. And, if that was the state engineer's concern, they were worried that we were speculating, let's hold a hearing and talk about it. Let's show how diligently we are working towards putting these water rights to use.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Edwards. Thank you to both counsel for your excellent arguments and briefs, and we'll take this case under submission.